You're listening to Filling Seats, the State of Enrollment Marketing in Higher Ed, hosted by StudentBridge. In this podcast, you'll learn what's working to grow, shape, and sustain enrollment at colleges and universities directly from fellow enrollment marketers, thought leaders, and ed tech innovators. Listen in for proven strategies to fill seats this cycle and beyond. Welcome to episode 9 of Filling Seats. In this episode, you'll hear from Jeremy Tears, who oversees admission services at Tutor Collegiate Strategies. Tutor provides advanced recruiting and training strategies and is based in North Carolina. You'll hear Jeremy talk about why inconsistency and outdated tactics are holding back enrollment marketers, how enrollment leaders can create a better culture to retain staff, and what students truly want in terms of personalization. Let's meet Jeremy.
I started in higher ed in 2014, and that's when I came aboard to Tutor Collegiate Strategies. Prior to that, I did a couple of things working with a lot of young people and families, which is pretty much how, honestly, I've spent most of my career. I was a college basketball coach for 8 years at 3 different schools, 2 in Minnesota and 1 in Indiana. And then I also was a high school, college, and career counselor for a couple of years in Minnesota as well. And so when I got into the higher ed space, I had a lot of familiarity, having obviously worked with a lot of high school students and families on a daily basis for a number of years. And I tell people all the time, if you don't know, those of you that are listening, a lot of the coaches on your campus, regardless of what your institution is, I really encourage you to talk to some of them just because they have so many good ideas that will be applicable on the admissions and enrollment side. And one thing a lot of coaches are really good at is personalization, because they're not recruiting thousands of students. They're just recruiting handfuls of students. And I know some of the best ideas that I've given to admissions counselors over the years are things I did as a coach or things that were passed along to me from good friends who are still coaches.
So tell me a little bit about Tutor Collegiate Strategies and what it is that y'all do.
So we're a higher ed partner that works with colleges and universities all across the country. And we've got 2 arms to the company, if you want to think of it that way. We've got what I call the athletic side of the company and then the admission side of the company, which is what I oversee. And so our CEO and president, Dan Tutor, oversees the entire company, hence the name of the company, Tutor Collegiate Strategies. Long story short, Dan's had the company going for about 16, 17 years now. And prior to getting going, Dan also has a background in athletics and radio broadcasting, higher education, a little bit as well. And Dan realized really quick when he started working with college coaches and athletic departments on things like staff training and communications, that there was a need across campus in the admissions and enrollment space. And the more he started to see admissions and enrollment folks sitting in on his trainings in the early 2000s, the more he got closer to making the decision, hey, maybe this is, you know, something else that we're going to expand into. And in 2014, honestly, I reconnected with him when I was in between careers. My wife and I had just had our daughter. She was a couple of years old. I was getting out of coaching and trying to figure out what I was going to do next with my career. And honestly, I reconnected with Dan through a mutual friend. And it just so happened a couple of weeks later, he was going to be in the area where I live in the Indianapolis, Indiana area. And I said, hey, I'll meet you at the Indy airport if you've got a few minutes. And I'd love to just catch up with you in the concourse. And long story short, end of a 30-minute conversation, I got a job offer out of nowhere. And it was this idea of what has worked so well on the athletic side with college coaches and athletic departments. There's something here that will work with admissions and enrollment teams as well. And it will have to be tweaked, but I think I'd like you to be the person to do that. And fast forward to 8 years later, and here we are.
That's amazing. I'd love if you could tell me a little bit more about your role and then what types of schools that you work with.
As Senior Director of Admission Services, which is just a fancy way of saying I'm the senior most person on the admission side, I oversee a small team that includes myself and my colleague, Ethan Penland, who used to be the Director of Admissions at Appalachian State University up until last summer. And then we've got a handful of writers and other people behind the scenes who assist us with a number of things. But ultimately, we're a very small company that partners with colleges literally across the entire company. I don't know if you can see the map. Over my shoulder here, but there's logos for every school we've done work with over the last 8 years. And I think we're north of 150 now, which is super exciting for me and for the company. They're all across the country. They're small privates, they're state flagships, they're schools that are mid-size in between. Ultimately, anybody that needs help with staff training or communication work, we are happy to partner with. And as I said, we don't have one part of the country we work with primarily. We literally travel all around the country. I literally flew in last night and landed at 12 and ultimately got home just after 12:30. But I spent yesterday in San Antonio, Texas, working with a small private college admissions team.
You piqued my interest earlier when you said that coaches aren't recruiting thousands of students, they're recruiting a handful of students. And so initially I was thinking that you were going to say, in the admissions work, we work with a lot of small institutions. So how do you apply this kind of personalized approach to larger institutions that are trying to recruit thousands of students?
It takes a massive amount of communication, as you might imagine. The challenge I feel like anytime you start working with mid or big size state institutions where your student population is in the tens of thousands, you still apply the same approach, I would argue. It's just you have to scale it, right? With hopefully the help of technology, aka a good CRM, something like Slate, Salesforce, and obviously there's other ones in the marketplace as well. And then it just takes a massive amount of communication because typically the larger you go, as you're familiar with, the more people, not only that work in the admissions and enrollment space, but you've got all these different other arms on a campus, marketing, communications, financial aid, student services, enrollment operations, which may on some campuses include campus visit people, people who do events, train tour guides, all of that. And so ultimately, you take the same approach, but it just requires leadership to really be on the same page, either with each other, or what I'm starting to see more is it's happening more probably at small privates and mids than it is at big institutions. You're starting to see the org structure be everybody's reporting to one VP. And that obviously makes things a little easier from a communication standpoint when one person obviously has ownership of all those different arms. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the biggest challenge with a lot of big campuses is it's not they don't know how to apply it, and they usually have the tech to apply it. There's just so many different people who are part of the process. And so that sometimes causes confusion, or it leads to a lot of additional conversations and things that quite honestly take a lot longer than they should because there's a lot of back and forth.
From your perspective, getting to work with all these different types of institutions, how would you describe the current state of enrollment marketing?
I was thinking about that, and the two words that popped immediately are inconsistent and outdated. Meaning, I think there's some great people doing some amazing things in the enrollment marketing space right now. But as a whole, I would argue most of what is being done inconsistently. Meaning there's not a thought out plan. There's a lot of one-offs. Let's tweak this message. Let's tweak the way we did this last year. When a lot of people need to look at the whole strategy and go, yeah, but that's part of a bigger strategy. And that only helps us accomplish 5%, 2%, whatever it is. And I say outdated because as somebody who works with a lot of colleges on communications, we do things like comm audits and we write a lot of messaging. And I kid you not, I see messaging and I'll ask the admissions director, the VP, Jeremy, we haven't changed that in 20 years, you know? It still uses deer at the beginning. Like those of you listening, right? This is one of the platforms I'll die on, or you know, the hills I'll die on. I've been saying it for 8 years. No 18-year-old or 17-year-old wants to see deer at the beginning of anything they get. None of us communicate with each other that way. So why do colleges still send stuff, right? And the problem with that is because communication has become so much more mature, the platforms have grown on the internet over the years. Ultimately, students are just in a different spot and a different generation. That's not what they're used to. I was used to, right, when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, getting things that said deer on it. And I'm sure it felt weird at the time, but it was, you're just used to seeing that, right? Now, unfortunately, none of us communicate with each other, our boss, our colleagues, our friends, our family that way. And yet colleges, and that's why I use the word outdated, still do that a majority of the time, or they're using all kinds of big words. Because there's this thought of, well, Jeremy, we're a higher ed institution. We have to sound super professional. And I'm like, I understand the thought process behind that, but here's what your target audience, aka prospective students, say about that. It has nothing to do with big words. It's more about, does this feel authentic and can I relate to what you're sending me?
We'll be right back.
Want to know exactly how peer institutions are increasing enrollment? Check out three case studies in the show notes featuring three schools who've grown enrollment consistently over the past several years, including a private liberal arts college in Illinois, a small public school in Nebraska, and a large public institution in Georgia. Or visit studentbridge.com/resources to see how other institutions achieve more, like increasing campus tour numbers, engagement, yield, and beyond. So do you see any of that changing over the next few years?
I do. Ultimately, I think colleges are going to be forced into change. As somebody who's familiar with the space, as I'm sure you are, right? Higher ed is very averse to change in a lot of cases. And I think a lot of it's just fear of the unknown. I get it. But to me, if you've got data to back up why you need to change, that's directly from the target audience that you're trying to ultimately get to do something, to me, why would you not come up with a plan that incorporates that data and feel confident that there's a pretty good chance this is going to work better than what we're currently doing? All that to say, right, with the number of high school students graduating going down over the next few years in this country, there's just going to be less students to choose from. And all of the other options now where you can make six figures without a college degree, which you really couldn't do very much when I again graduated from college in the 90s, I just think at the end of the day, colleges are going to be forced into changing even if they don't want to, because their enrollment numbers will continue to go down and dwindle if they do not start to do things in a more student-centered way. And it has to be what their target audience wants. And there has to be an understanding of not every single student wants to be communicated with the same way. And not every single student, right? If they live close to campus, they're far away, they're a first generation student, they're a student of color, they all may need different things from you, even if there is crossover. And so I'm starting to see a lot more of that happen in enrollment marketing. But if we're talking about the grand scheme of enrollment marketing, we're not there yet as a whole. It's just, again, it's bits and pieces, which is why I go back to those terms, inconsistent, outdated.
You mentioned earlier that you do a lot of staff training. So I'd love to talk a little bit about the Great Resignation and how you've seen that affect schools and some things that they're doing to combat it.
I really believe there's a misconception around this. Let me explain. Does everybody want to be paid potentially more for their time? No question. I don't know anybody who wouldn't absolutely love to make more than they currently make. But ultimately, I think a lot of people also understand when they get into higher education in a lot of positions, not all positions, but anything that involves student recruitment events, things where you're going to be front facing, there's going to be a lot of requirements for you to, again, work atypical. I got to be in the office X number of days for X number of hours because we have students and families and other people coming and going. And I have other people on campus I have to interact with and just things that are much more efficient and easier to do when you're in person. I don't think it's this notion of if we all of a sudden paid people more and we let them go hybrid or completely remote, that like all of a sudden this would fix this Great Resignation. And I feel like that's the narrative that at least I hear more often than not. There's no question, like I said, that conversations around flexible things need to happen, especially at certain times of the year. The director I was talking with at the school I just got back from, San Antonio, we were talking about how during reading season, when his staff reads, there's flexibility there that if they want to read from home and not come in for a day, ultimately that's totally, those type of conversations, I would argue, need to become standard practice if they're not already in every admissions office. But where I really think the conversation needs to go is we need to have a conversation about what it means to be a leader in the enrollment marketing and or admission space of higher education in 2022. Because I do one-on-one meetings with every single admissions and enrollment person who does those trainings. And so you can imagine after doing thousands of those, not just over the last 2 years, but over 8 years, right? All the different things I've heard. And so much of it, when I talk to people and they're contemplating leaving, contemplating moving to a different role across campus, or contemplating going into a completely different profession, so many of them don't talk about, I want a hybrid job, or I want more money. what they want is they want to feel valued more by leadership, by their colleagues. They want to enjoy, if I'm going to work crazy hours and Saturdays and weekends like we do in higher ed, like I understand it's going to be stressful, but I also want to enjoy it a little bit more. I want to have fun. And I think there's just, unfortunately, a culture more of stress and everything is a priority and everything's on fire every day.
The hair on fire.
Yeah. No question. And everybody hits a wall at some point, right? It's just, what do you do when you hit the wall? Some of us bounce right back until we hit the next wall. And some of us just don't know how to deal with it and say, I can't do this anymore. And so I get asked all the time, hey, Jeremy, what are the highest functioning admissions teams and enrollment marketing teams that you've worked with do? And the answer always is the same. They communicate unbelievably well together, but that's a byproduct of leadership because leadership sets the expectation. And it doesn't mean they don't argue and they don't disagree and that all of that 100% still happens. And so I think we need to have a real serious look at what it means to be a leader in higher education in 2022. There are some amazing people out there. There are some amazing people who I think could be good leaders out there, but I think it requires things like training around leadership. That's not happening consistently enough before people get into those leadership positions. And then I think my philosophy, I tell people all the time is, as a leader, you have to remember you work for your staff, not the other way around. And I have too many leaders who basically say, I don't want to micromanage. I want my staff to figure it out. And I'm like, that's fine. But guess what? Your staff's all different. And some of them don't function that way. And so you have to be able to take each one of them as an individual and figure out, what does this other person need from me? If you're going to be, in my opinion, an effective leader, not just in higher education, but quite honestly, in any industry right now.
I was recently listening to a podcast about burnout. And one of the things that they were saying was that burnout doesn't occur necessarily just because you're being overworked. It occurs when you are working towards something that you don't believe has a true end, and that you don't think the things that you are doing are contributing toward your ultimate goals.
Yeah, it is. It's leadership setting expectations, which doesn't happen. Back to inconsistencies. We use them on the enrollment marketing side of things. You could use it in a bunch of other spaces, including the admission space. There's just inconsistent leadership, unfortunately, in the style and the way that right people are managed. And we, again, as human beings, we're all emotional. It's how we're created. And things like inconsistency don't bode well, to your point, for things like being productive day in and day out and feeling positive more than negative. Then on top of that, I would argue, it's just understanding when we onboard people, not just at the leadership level, but even brand new staff, what are we doing in those first couple of days, couple of weeks, couple of months, to not only give them a foundation for what they're going to encounter, but continue to not just check in, because that's not intentional enough, but follow up in a very intentional way as leaders to try to figure out, is she getting this? Do I need to micromanage her and hold her hand because she's not doing what I'm asking her to do? Because I tell leaders all the time, I understand you don't want to micromanage. But at the end of the day, when your boss comes to you, if you don't make enrollment numbers, that admissions counselor typically does not lose their job. That vice president of an enrollment or that director of admissions or enrollment loses their job because they're in that leadership position. And so if your staff unfortunately needs something different than what you would typically give, I feel as a leader, that's your number one job to recognize that. But then number two, to be able to say, all right, how do I get the most out of everybody? And sometimes that's not always the same. And then as we're doing things, to your point of being stressed and everything being hair on fire, we're going to have wins along the way. Are we celebrating that as a team? Because I don't see that enough either, right? And if it's back to culture, that's one of those things that can trump people being exhausted and tired, because they're like, you know what, as for all the bad days I have, boy, I like working with these people. And boy, we all work hard. And boy, I actually like coming into the office more days than I don't like it. And there are some places where there are amazing cultures right now. I just think, again, this is a conversation that needs to be had on a much bigger level, because it ties back into this whole concept of the Great Resignation.
What are some things that you see schools doing in terms of marketing that you think are really great?
Number one, it's understanding your target audience, right? the best enrollment marketers do a ton of what I would call market research. We do it as a company. Every single time I do a training, or my colleague Ethan does a training, or we do on the athletic side with coaches, we are surveying current and prospective students about not just the school that they may have chosen, but about their college search. And then Tutor Collegiate Strategies also throughout the year partners alongside companies like NISH. And we've done multiple surveys. We'll have just released our latest survey where we talked to almost 10,000 high school juniors who will be seniors this fall about what they're seeing and how they're feeling about their college search. And when you are able to go down on a micro level inside the macro, if that makes sense, you're able to really see there are some common pain points year after year. And the best enrollment marketers don't just say, I'm just going to send them what I think they want. No, I'm going to figure out what do they want? What medium do they want it in? What frequency do they want it? What gets them to engage and have a conversation? And so I'm starting to see more of that because I think more data is available as well. Technology has helped with that a ton. If you have a good CRM like Slate, again, you have access to so much data that you can mine, but it requires, again, leadership, and it requires onboarding and not just a let's do a Slate training one time and let's hope everybody remembers it, which unfortunately happens way too frequently. So ultimately, the increase in data, I think, has led a lot more enrollment marketers to do a lot more segmentation and personalization, which honestly, personalization is the number one thing I continue to see students talk about. If they feel like a number in this process, and if it's a school like large public colleges, it becomes harder because you're starting with an even bigger number of prospective students than you would be if you're at whatever a small private institution would be that you'd want to choose. And so at the end of the day, it's segmenting and personalizing, but then it's how do I figure out what we were supposed to talk about and how do we do it in a way that actually feels like a back and forth conversation like you and I are having now, and not like we're vomiting information all over students and families, which is what admissions counselors and enrollment marketers tell me all the time. Jeremy, I feel like I'm vomiting information on them. And I'm like, then stop. You don't have to tell them everything all at once. There is no expectation of that. In fact, that's what they don't want because it overwhelms them in what is an already scary, confusing, and overwhelming process.
So personalization is something that's come up probably on every episode of this podcast, but something that has also come up is lack of bandwidth, and those two things don't really go together. And so what do you believe that prospective students want in terms of personalization? What do they want to be personalized? And then if you are a small shop, you've got one or two people, you're really low on bandwidth, what are the top three things that you can do to just start to bite away at the elephant in terms of personalization?
There's misconceptions sometimes about what personalization really means. It used to be 10, 15, even 20 years ago, you put their name on a parking spot when they came to visit campus. Don't get me wrong, it's still a nice touch to do that in 2022. But every school does that now. You don't stand out as much as you used to. So like a going trend also is let's put the student's first name in the subject line. I'm not telling you that can't be effective. The problem is when you do it every time and every other school does it almost every time, it just runs together as students skim, for example, their inbox, right? It doesn't stand out. Personalization to me means I'm going to find ways to create a conversation with as many students who are willing to engage with me. All right, then let's talk about what step one is. Step one is, are you going to engage with something that feels like a mass message that comes from an admissions at schoolname.edu address? Maybe, but students say probably not, because that's code for us for you just blasted this out to however many tens of thousands of students. So change number one is you have the ability in almost every CRM, for example, to make messaging either come or appear to be coming if somebody else writes it from all of the admissions counselors. And I have data that basically says the first person they want to hear from is not the director of admissions or the vice president of enrollment or a faculty member, or even, believe it or not, a current student in a lot of cases when they start their college search. It makes sense in their brain that we know there's these people called admissions counselors at most schools, and we don't really know what they do, but like we think or we know they're supposed to help us. And we've heard this from our high school counselor, our peers, other family members who are older. And so it makes sense to them that, okay, that might be the person who reaches out. Well, then it's, what do you initially say when you reach out? Because if all you do is list off a bunch of bullet points about your school and facts and figures, right? Number one, you don't stand out. And number two, even though you got them to open the email, it doesn't feel like a personal message. And now you make getting their attention even harder going forward. And so it's saying, I'm going to slow down and I'm going to do three things that I talk with admissions teams about all the time when I do trainings. I'm going to humanize my content. I'm going to empathize. And I'm going to, the third one is what we're talking about, personalize. How do you combine that all in one? You recognize you don't know this student yet, but you're excited they want to learn more about whatever school you work at. And so it's, what can I ask them that's a direct intentional question? Not just, do you have any questions or what can I answer for you? Because while that may seem helpful, students tell us, I don't know where you want me to start. There's 600 things I could ask you. I don't want to say the wrong thing. So you know what I say? No, I'm good. No, I don't think I have anything right now. So if you ask a direct intentional question based on what you know or don't know, for example, at the beginning, that allows you to get a conversation going and then get a feel for where they're at, what they're looking for, why they're interested in your school, what they want to do with whatever major they think they want to do. And then back to the personalization, the way you personalize is you then provide relevant information as a counselor in that follow-up based on whatever engagement you get back. And you can scale that if you've got, for example, people in enrollment marketing, whether you have 1, 10, or 12, and of course it's easier if you have more bandwidth, who either have created comms ahead of time or who realize, I don't have to in any of these responses, whether I'm a counselor, I'm an enrollment marketer, writing communications, say 1,600 things in a response. All I have to do is keep the conversation going. And that might be a sentence, that might be a paragraph, but it doesn't need to be something where I spend 2 hours editing an email 5 times when all I'm trying to do is say, okay, she's interested in this, she's wondering this. All right, now I'm going to go here and see what she says when I send her this information. And then if she engages again, maybe I'm going to ask her if she's thought about going and coming to visit campus or if she's taken any other campus visits and if those have been helpful for her as she's been able to get a feel for what those schools are like. That type of conversation can be done at scale when you have good communication, regardless of your bandwidth, and you just say, I'm going to trust the process and understand that the goal is just to keep conversations going and then ultimately, right, try to get them to do these things once they've engaged with me or shown some level of interest, aka I'm going to wait to ask them to visit or apply or ultimately enroll until I've got some reason to think they're ready to do that.
And I will say, as a marketer who's sent a plain text personalized email from an admissions counselor, you also need your entire team to be bought into that this is something that's going to happen. And this is why we're doing it. Again, back to all working towards a common goal, because you send that email at 3 o'clock and then the next day, all the counselors open up their inboxes and they have way more emails than they typically do in the morning. They need to know, hey, this is a strategy that we're doing and this is why we're doing it, because otherwise you're going to have a revolt on your hands.
You're 100% right. And it's a huge pain point when I do trainings. And it's why, again, trainings accompany the comms work we do. Because to your point, there has to be, you need to get like a marriage between those two things if you're going to see the result you want to see. Because you're right. It's a super annoying thing for admissions counselors when they're like, Jeremy, I don't know what our enrollment comms team's sending. And if it has my name on it and all of a sudden my inbox blows up, I'm like, what are these people talking about? And we don't see it till after the fact, or we don't see it ever. And we're expected to then do something with this. So it all goes back to a couple of things we've talked about already, right? It's leadership and it's communication. And that has to be, again, something that is prioritized. Otherwise, there is a trickle-down effect in so many different things that ultimately allow you to hopefully make your class in a given year.
What about your non-high school student population? People always forget about transfer students, adult learners, and then, of course, beyond the undergraduate world, we've got graduate students, law, business, all these other things. Any other nuances in the strategy or the tactics based on those different populations?
It's understanding that there are different nuances to your point, but the core foundational things don't change. Do all students want personalization? Yes. Do all students want to be less overwhelmed and more feel like you're helping and trying to understand them and get to know them? No question. Whether they're pursuing an MBA, whether they're a transfer student, whether they're an international student, or whether they're a high school student, They all want that. They all tell us that in surveys. But my advice would be you still have to understand your target audience. It's just your target audience is obviously different. And as a transfer student, this whole process shrinks and happens in a matter of days or weeks on most college campuses, regardless of size, when it comes to transfer students. And you have to understand what the pain points are. And every person who's listening who does non-traditional recruitment knows the faster I can tell students three things: how many of their credits are going to transfer, how long it's going to take them to graduate, and what it's going to cost. In some cases, literally, if you're the first to do it, that's where the student enrolls, because they've already done enough research ahead of time, or they already considered you when they were considering out of high school, right? Before they're transferring from the community college or the 4-year they might be at now. They don't need what I call whining and dining and all the back and forth that you might do with a traditional student. And so it's just understanding that and saying, okay, then we don't need, all right, a long drawn out comm flow, but we do need comms that feel personal. We do need to create opportunities for connections. And what I unfortunately see on too many campuses is transfers get lumped in with first time freshmen all the time, and it drives them insane. Please send me something that sounds like you understand I'm transferring and I'm not a high school student. Or please, can you do a different event that is specifically for transfer students and not like anybody who wants to show up? And then on the grad side, it's the same thing. It's just understanding you have to, why are they even considering doing a master's degree? They don't like their job. They want a different career. They want to get to a higher leadership level and it's required, or they think it's required. There are a whole bunch of reasons. But before you can give this person all this information and expect them to be able to utilize it and for it to be impactful, you have to understand their why. And their why, if you do your data and your research, usually is a handful of those things. And the pain points are usually pretty obvious, regardless of where you are in the country with non-traditional students. And so at its core, it's the same foundational things, but it's understanding they have to be tweaked because of the way students who are non-traditional go through this process.
I'm curious if there's anything else that you would add that you think is a big impact, like start doing this now kind of thing.
Yeah, I would tell you a couple of things. Like I get asked all the time, all right, Jeremy, if my admissions team or my enrollment marketing team becomes really good at 4, 5, 6 things, like these will be game changers. What are those things? Now, these are in no particular order, but one of the things we haven't talked about, but ties in with all of this is storytelling. You become a better storyteller, you'll be a better enrollment marketer and a better recruiter. But step one is you have to get somebody's attention first to even read your story, listen to it, if it's a video, whatever. And I think higher ed, unfortunately, skips step one way too often and just assumes, oh, I've got this person's attention. They'll 100% read this or watch this video that I spent all kinds of time on, or my team spent all kinds of time on. No. Because of how much information is coming at all of us, especially young people in 2022, we're all overloaded. It takes a lot more to get and keep our attention. And so it's understanding, if I'm going to try to incorporate storytelling, what does my target audience want and what medium should I use and what kinds of stories do they want me to tell? And higher ed, again, is very good at saying, I think I know the answers and I don't really have any data to support it other than my gut tells me. And I'm like, listen, unless you have data to support it, it's a hunch. And if it works, great. I'm not telling you it won't ever work, but chances are when you have data, it's going to work a lot more often than it doesn't. And so if you become a better storyteller, if you understand just how to get and keep somebody's attention, like that is such a basic skill that people do not take time on. And if you're an extrovert like me, I've been blessed. Like I suck at a lot of things, but it's not hard for me to talk to somebody either I don't know, I just met, or to get a conversation going in a crowd or one-on-one. I don't know why. I don't know if it's DNA I got, what it is. That's not hard for me, but I feel like that's a skill that is lacking. Like I have a 12-year-old daughter. That's the biggest thing that freaks me out about her generation is I'm not tech averse. I love tech, but my fear is because they're on tech so much, they're not forced to do what you and I are doing right now as much as I was when I was younger. And yet I would argue, if you were thinking of overwhelming themes that we've talked about in this episode, communication is like 1A or 1B. And being right, able to just hold a conversation with somebody and empathize. And that to me, right, if you can do that, that sets you at a whole different level. Leading the conversation, as I call it, it's understanding students need you to guide them in this process as an enrollment marketer, as an admissions counselor. It's not asking them, do you have any questions? They don't know what to say. They don't know what they don't know. They need you to be the guide.
We did a webinar about the importance of live chat, and I looked up stats about phone and email usage by Gen Z and millennials, and I was astounded that it gives Gen Z anxiety to have to pick up the phone and call. You don't think about that because, like, when I was a kid, I had to call over and say, like, oh, hello, Mrs. Tears. Is Jeremy available? May I please speak with him?
No, they have DMs. And they have all kinds of other ways, text messaging, to be able to get a hold of. And that, again, back to one of the things we talked about earlier with outdated, is just something that I'm like, this is something that higher ed needs to do more of now. Because before you can share all these things and expect a student to want to learn more or do all these next steps, you just have to get their attention first. Leading the conversation will help with that. Just understanding how to start conversations in different common situations that you're going to deal with in your role, whatever it might be. Asking direct and intentional questions, so important. And I get pushback, but Jeremy, isn't that going to be pushy? Students tell us all the time in the surveys we do, we'd much rather you narrow it down and tell us what you really want to know, but try to be empathetic and like nice when you do that as well. And we're more than happy to share. And then the last couple of things, you got to be able to communicate with parents. I would argue it might be outside of storytelling, it might be for enrollment marketers and for admissions counselors, the biggest opportunity in the space right now, meaning there's not enough of it being done. And yet the impact when you do it well, ROI is off the charts, right? Because parents will tell you even more in this process. And very few students go through this process completely alone, whether it's from a bouncing ideas off of or a financial support, AKA parents are contributing some or all of the cost of them going to college.
How can someone get in touch with you? And what are some things that Tutor Collegiate Strategies can help them with?
We've got all kinds of ways we can help you, and none of it will cost you anything but your time. I am more than happy. People think I'm crazy when I say this. Those people listening who have done what I'm encouraging other people to do know that I'm more than happy to take time. I will give you my email address right now, first and foremost, which is my name, jeremy@dantutor.com. If I can ever help anybody listening, or somebody's writing an email and wants an outside set of eyes, literally send me an email, introduce yourself. People do it more often than you would think, and I will give you quick feedback, and it will cost you nothing but your time. If you want to go check out and learn more about what we do, you literally go to admissions.dantutor.com, and you can check out the website and see all kinds of stuff about the trainings and the communication work we do. And then the biggest thing I would encourage everybody to do that I have been told is very helpful is I do a weekly newsletter that goes out every Tuesday morning. I've done it for 8 years. I'm very proud of the fact that for 8 years running, knock on wood, I have not missed a Tuesday. And every Tuesday, I'm writing about probably something we talked about today on this podcast or something else as to what I'm seeing and hearing in the enrollment marketing and admission space and saying, hey, if you're dealing with this and you're looking for tips and suggestions, here's a couple of things for you to think about. You can subscribe to that newsletter by going to the website, and at the top, you'll literally see you put in your first and last name and your email and hit subscribe. That's it. Done. There's no account to create, no password. Everything is free. On the website, you can also see it says blog at the top. Literally every single article I've written over 8 years is archived there. They're 100% free. Most of them are 2 to 4 minute reads. You can read those at your leisure any single time from anywhere you can get an internet connection. So I encourage people, if they're looking for some quick, easy professional development, that's actually something they can take and apply in their day to day and isn't like, oh, I have to go ask my boss for budget money or I need 5 more people to do that. Subscribe to the newsletter. I think that would be something that will be beneficial.
Definitely. Thank you so much for interviewing with me today. And I love talking to you.
I appreciate the opportunity.
This is the Filling Seats podcast, hosted by StudentBridge, where we help enrollment teams achieve more by fusing authentic storytelling with industry-leading technology and personalized digital experiences. If you're looking to attract more, amaze more, and achieve more, visit studentbridge.com. To connect with this episode's guest, check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. For more information about the podcast or to let us know you'd like to be a guest, visit studentbridge.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.